Now we begin. And indeed, once again, greetings unto you, beloved and holy friends. I come forth in this hour, yet again, to abide with you where you believe yourself to be. For in truth, if it were not for the fact that you are choosing to turn your attention to the world of physicality through the vehicle of the body, our communication would not require the device of what you might call channeling, nor the devices of the technologies of this world, in which to record and capture spoken words that are themselves but the reflection of what the words would point your mind toward. Therefore, beloved friends, I come not for myself, but for you. I come not to teach you, but to love you, until you choose from the depth within your own being to set aside every illusion you have ever given credence to, and to remember the truth which alone is true. For indeed in that hour, there is a transcendence of all that knows limitation. There is a transcendence of all that knows coming and going, birth and death. There is but the mind of Christ, within which each of us, as a spark of divine light, as a sunbeam to the sun, rests eternally in perfect communion and communication always. Now, of course, the great secret is that that is the state of your reality, that in each and every moment you abide in perfect communion with the whole of creation, since all things are but temporary modifications of the one fundamental energy which I have chosen to call the Christ mind, the offspring of the Father. And so, beloved friends, I come to where you choose to be. And if you would choose to open that place within the heart and within the mind, in which you can communicate with me directly, I will meet you there as well. What is important then, by way of our beginning, is to consider the simple fact that your experience is always the effect of where you choose to focus the attention of your consciousness, itself being unlimited forever, embracing all of the many dimensions of creation. You abide in that which embraces all things in all ways and at all times. And in truth, you do not know separation, birth or death, gain or loss. In this hour, as you have taken the tape from its envelope and put it into your machinery, recognize how you, as an infinite being, have deliberately chosen to participate in a form of experience. You have therefore called to yourself the sensory apparatus of the body through which to filter the energies of this physical domain, that you might hear vibrations against vocal cords that create words that carry certain meanings for each and every one of you. And each and every one of you will color that meaning according to the perceptions that you have chosen to place value upon. Does this mean that some are ahead and some behind? It only seems that way. In reality, each of you is equal. Each of you choosing from your infinite freedom to attract to yourself certain vibrational frequencies, if you will, certain forms or qualities of experience. That freedom is what you abide in always, from before the foundations of this world and long after this world ceases to be. In each and every moment, then, you cannot be a victim of what you see. And nothing is outside of you. What you experience, you have directly and deliberately called to yourself. And if you hold the thought that, well, I don't like what I've called to myself, that's perfectly okay too, for then you have called to yourself the experience of being in judgment of yourself. Merely look with the wonder of a child and see what it feels like. And ask yourself, is this an energy I wish to continue in, or would I choose something else? For ultimately, when all possible choices within the dream of separation have been made, have been tasted, have been felt, have been known, then finally there emerges the still, quiet voice of spirit that speaks through the soul, and we'll come back to that, whispering of the one truth and the one reality, the one love, the one peace, the one bliss that is continual. Then the soul begins to turn from the things of this created world. It begins to withdraw its attention, as it were, from its attachments to all of the things it has called to itself. It begins to transcend its sense of identification with the vibrational frequencies it had only meant to play with and then took seriously. For it is seriousness within the mind which is the creation of ego, and it is great seriousness that holds the vibrations of what you would no longer experience within the field of your being, within the field of your soul. And as you, as the soul, the individual divine spark, begins to choose to withdraw the attention, to withdraw the value you have placed upon all things, and as you learn to simplify the nature of your own consciousness, as you begin to realize that you can surrender into something that seems beyond you, that you can entertain the insane thought of trusting the invisible, you come more and more to be less and less. And as you become less and less of what you thought you were, conversely, you become more and more of what your Father created you to be, the thought of perfect love in form, a channel, a simple vehicle, through which that love of spirit can shine forth. And your only task becomes the cleaning of your windows, the polishing of your floors, the weeding of your garden, so that that light can pour forth unimpeded. No longer will you find the need to defend perceptions you had identified with in error. And you will indeed know when you have come to that state of awakening, for you will be able to look upon all created things that you've ever experienced, all reactions you have ever held within the mind, all perceptions, all judgments, all desires that you have ever held for anyone or anything. And as they arise in your mind, they will not disturb your peace, and you will smile. and you will see that within your consciousness has arisen all saintlyhood and all devilishness. You have been both saint and sinner, and your happiness and your unhappiness has been merely an effect of where you would choose to place your attention. Indeed, beloved friends, I come forth to meet you wherever you are, because I have chosen to use the infinite power of consciousness given me of the Father, as equally as it is given unto you, to discover how deep delight can be when the mind is focused only on seeing from and seeing only the mind of Christ. I have therefore called to myself all multitude of experiences, even when I walked upon your beloved earth as a man, in order to challenge myself, in order to test myself, in order to condition myself to rise above, to transcend all possible experiences that could distract me from the remembrance of who I am. You could say, by the way, that my crucifixion was simply the climax of my own direct choice to be challenged by the events of space and time so that I could cultivate within myself the ability to see from and to see only the perfect purity of the mind of Christ. The point that I'm seeking to make with you is that in each and every moment, what you are experiencing in the realm of your emotions and mind and the effects to a latter degree within the body are there because you, from your infinite freedom, have simply selected that experience to focus, that energy, to focus your attention on, so that you can see what the effects are. The insanity, you see, does not come from having chosen to see something other than the mind of Christ. The insanity which you experience as your pain and your suffering and your seeking and your dramas comes only from your mistaken choice to become identified with what arises in the field of your awareness. You therefore lose the sight of innocence. For indeed, all events are perfectly neutral, and you are free to see them any way you want. When a child is born, and many of you who are mothers know this, you can experience a depth of joy that is unspeakable. Likewise, you can also experience fear and contraction at the thought of having to be responsible for a child. When a loved one dies, and you experience grief and suffering, rest assured it is because you have chosen to contract your attention so that all you can see is the loss of an animated body, and thereby convince yourself that you have become separated from the loved one. I speak from experience when I share with you that separation is an illusion. And when death occurs in your plane, in that very moment, you still have the power to choose to recognize that something's changed and to shift your attention to a different faculty that the body could never possibly contain, in which you perceive and hear and communicate with that spark of divine light, the soul, that seems to have given up the idea of trying to keep a physical form animated. It is therefore imperative, and in fact, it is the very first step on what we are going to begin to call the way of the heart. The first step in awakening is to allow into the mind the thought, the axiom, the truth, that nothing which you are experiencing is caused by anything outside of you. You experience only the effects of your own choice. For you see, during this coming year, we will be building month by month on what I am choosing now to call the way of the heart. It is the way unknown to the world. It is a way unknown to many that would call themselves spiritual teachers, for it is not a way of resting on or becoming dependent on magical means. It is rather that pathway which cultivates within you the decision to turn your attention upon your own mind, upon your own behavior, upon what is true and real for you moment to moment, to study it, to consider it, to feel it, to breathe the light of spirit through it, and to constantly retrain the mind so that it assumes complete responsibility in each moment. And why is this necessary? Because without it, there can be no peace. Without it, you cannot transcend the false identifications that you have chosen. To use perhaps a simpler form of your language, you need to come to the point where you say to yourself, I've done this to myself. I did it. I must correct it. No one is to blame. The world is innocent. And in the coming months, we will be communicating with you more and more deeply the finer points, if you will, of the way of the heart. For it is that way that was taught to me. And it is that way to which I have pointed you with many, many clues. It is that way that brings about the reversal of every thought you have ever had about anyone or anything. It is that way alone which allows you to pass back through the eye of the needle and to come to rest in the perfect peace from which you have sprung forth. The way of the heart is not the way of the intellect. For indeed, that aspect of the mind was never designed to be your master. It was designed to be the humble and, if you'll pardon the expression, very stupid servant of the awakened heart. The heart is that which feels all things, embraces all things, trusts all things, allows all things. The heart is that in which the soul rests eternally. The heart is that which is beyond space and time and is that spark of light in the mind of God, which is called Christ. And only in that will you find the peace that you seek. You will discover then that the pathway of awakening is not a pathway of avoidance, but a pathway of truthfulness. It is not a pathway of accomplishment and pride, but a pathway of releasing from the consciousness every hope and every wish to be special, to see yourself as having made progress so that you can pound the fist upon the chest and spread the tail feathers. It is a transcendence of the hope of somehow getting God's attention so that he will look upon you and say, oh, you've been such a good person. Oh, my goodness, yes, well, I think we'll allow you into the kingdom now. It is a way in which you will come to cultivate, regardless of your inner experience or degrees of awakening, to cultivate the willingness and the art of returning to the simplicity of empty-headedness and not knowingness with each and every breath. It is a way of life in which all things and all events become an aspect of your meditation and your prayer, until there is established once again within you the truth that is true always. Not my will, but thine be done. For of myself I do nothing, but my Father does all things through me. Imagine then a state of being in which you walk through this world seemingly appearing like everyone else, and yet you are spacious within, you are empty within. In truth, you desire nothing, though you allow desire to move through you, and you recognize it as the voice of the Father guiding your personality, your emotions, and even the body to the places, to the events, to the people, to the things, to the experiences through which the tapestry of the atonement is being woven, through which all of the children of God are called home again. And you trust the complete flow of that, whether you are asked to give a speech in front of 10,000 people, whether you're asked to tell a friend the truth of your feelings, or whether or not you are perhaps asked to sweep the streets and live penniless. For in truth, that mind that trusts the source of its creation allows all things, trusts all things, embraces all things, and transcends all things. Rest assured then, whenever you feel frustration and anxiety, it is because you have decided not to trust the truth. And the truth is simply this: only God's plan for salvation can work for you. Your way must always fail, for your way begins with the illusory and insane assumption that you are a separate being from the mind of God and must therefore direct your own course. For if you are sick and diseased and not at peace, why would you decide that you know how to create peace? It requires great humility to accept the first step of the path. I've done all this. I must undo it. But I have no idea how I did this. Therefore, I must surrender to something else. I want to give you this thought, even as I gave it to this, my beloved brother, some time ago. And the thought is this, and I would ask that you consider it well. What if the very life you are living, and each experience that is coming to you now, since the moment you decided, I've got to awaken here, what if everything was being directly sent to you of your Father because your Father knows what is necessary to unravel within your consciousness to allow you to awaken? What if the very things you are resisting are the very stepping stones to your homecoming? What if you achieved a maturity along this pathway in which you are finally willing to let things be just as they are. And if it was necessary to sweep the streets, you simply took a deep breath and said, "Father, you know the way home," and therefore began sweeping. And up into the mind comes the thought, "Oh my God, I won't be recognized. I won't stand out. People won't think I'm special if I'm just a street sweeper." And you recognize, aha, no wonder my father wants me to do this. I've got to flush this up so that I can look at it, disidentify from it, and learn to be the presence of love in the sweeping of the street. For in truth I tell you, the least of these among you, according to your perception, is already equal to the greatest. And there is none among you who is less than I am. And so the way of the heart begins there. It begins by accepting the humility that you've created quite a mess within your consciousness. You've created a labyrinth and gotten lost within it. And you don't know the way back. That of yourself, you can do nothing. For all you've managed to achieve is the creation of a whole lot of insane dramas that are in truth occurring nowhere except within the field of your mind. They are like chimeras. Like dreams. In truth, there is no difference between a waking state in which you would be the director of your life and the dreams you have when the body sleeps at night. They are both the same thing. I wish to direct you to peace. Even that peace which forever transcends the understanding and comprehension of the world. I desire, because my Father desires it through me, to bring you wholly to where I am, that you might discover there is someone that got there ahead of you. And when you look closely, you go, "Ah, it's myself. I've always been there. But I forgot." And in the end of all journeying, and in the end of all purification, and indeed purification is still necessary, you will discover that to awaken means to have journeyed nowhere. It means to have arrived at a goal that has never changed. Awakening is only remembrance, but it is a remembrance not just of the intellect, for it is not an idea, as you would understand ideas. It is an idea that vibrates through the whole field of your beingness, so that even the cells of the body, while yet the body remains coalesced together in its present form, even the cells of the body awaken and relax into the truth that is true always. The way of the heart. If you were a gardener, would you not cultivate the art of weeding your garden? Would you not look to see that the soil is just the correct dampness? Would you not keep your eye on the clouds on the horizon and the heat of the day? Would you not cover the delicate plants that need protection while they grow strong? And if those that would come would not respect your garden, would you not ask them to leave or build a temporary fence until the garden is strong enough? Until it bursts forth with enough fruit so that you can give to even those who do not respect it? Be you therefore a wise gardener. Cultivate a deep love and respect for yourself. for you are not here to fix the world. You are not here to fix your brother or sister. 'Tis only love that heals, and until you have loved yourself wholly, by having purified the mind of every erroneous thought you've ever held, until you've loved yourself, you do not in truth love anyone or anything, save in those brief moments when you let your guard down and the love of God shines forth through you so quickly you don't even know what happened. For the wise gardener cultivates a state of consciousness in which the love of God is unimpeded. Beloved friends, those of you that have elected to answer a call to participate in this pathway with this family, if you would make your commitment to trusting your Creator for having set before you a pathway that can indeed lead you home, you will indeed arrive at home. But commitment means that you don't get to leave the room when the shouting begins. The shouting we're speaking of is the shouting within your own mind, within your own body, within your own emotions, that you will stay with these things by being honest about them and loving yourself for ever having the power to even create such insane perceptions of yourself and the world around you. The way of the heart is the final pathway that any soul can enter. There are many stages of awakening. There are many pathways that can be followed, but ultimately all roads lead to Rome, so they say. Eventually, each soul must find its way into the way of the heart and come back to the truth that it's time to take responsibility, to learn to cultivate the ability to look upon the deep and vicious blackness of what I have called ego, which is nothing more than the cesspool of denial. It is that which lacks light, and begin to bring light back to it by simply observing your own mind, your own behavior, your own reactions, with a sense of wonder, with a sense of innocence, with a sense of childlikeness. For is it not written that you must again become a little child to enter the kingdom? The little child simply marvels at all that they see. Oh, how about that? Can you imagine looking upon the deepest, darkest parts of your own shadow, your own denials, and being able to say, oh, how about that? Remember then that everything is neutral, and in truth, all that which arises within your consciousness has no effect upon the truth of your reality. The way of the heart, then, is a way of cultivating the decision to become identified with the light that can shine away all darkness, not by fighting with it, but by recognizing it, embracing it as your own creation, and choosing again. The way of the heart is the way that I teach. And now we begin a more focused, shall we say, year-long study. A year-long cultivation together, that the way of the heart might become established within your holy mind. And we will be drawing indeed upon many sources, and there may be some surprises according to who may choose to speak to you through this vehicle. But rest assured, at all times and in all ways, I have committed myself to gently directing the birthing and the manifestation of what you have come to call Shanti Cristo. The idea was given by me, and what I give, I nurture, and what I create together with you, I do not abandon. Therefore, you will find that I will be here always. We will have yet to see whether you will be. Remember then always that the truth is true always. Is it not time, beloved friends, to truly step into ownership of your only reality? The way of the heart does not know the word avoidance. The way of the heart does not know deception, manipulation, or control. The way of the heart does not know blame, though it watches these things arise as echoes of old patterns now outgrown. It learns to see them, to recognize them, like you might recognize certain kinds of clouds that pass through the sky, and then to turn the attention of the mind that a new choice might be made. The way of the heart is the way that calls you home, and the call comes from that deep part of your soul that is still like unto the Spirit, which abides as Christ in the holy mind of God. Trust then that you are as a sunbeam to the sun, and trust not the perceptions you have cultivated in error. For you are not alone on the way that you journey. And you journey not apart from your brothers and sisters. This family cannot know separation, though some may seem to come and go. For once the call to awaken through this lineage has been acknowledged, though bodies may not communicate in space and time, rest assured, communication remains. And there is no way to avoid it. And so we begin. The way of the heart. We enter now a stage where it's time to stop listening out of polite kindness or out of curiosity, and to step into the willingness to don the mantle of that one committed to healing every obstacle to the presence of love that may yet remain secretly hidden in the depth of that part of your mind which would struggle to be separate from God. And to remember that you are truly the light that can come to shine lovingly upon every aspect of darkness you have known. So along this pathway this year, you're going to learn how to shake hands with the devil and do a little jig with him and recognize his face to be your own. For when you can dance with the darkness that you have created, that darkness is transformed into an angel, and light abides with light. We will be giving you and bringing forth certain meditations, if you will, certain energetic practices to help cultivate within you a quality of feeling that will allow you to recognize energies that do not serve you in a way that transcends what your mind may choose to think of these energies, so that you learn more and more to lead with the body, if you will, to lead with your feeling nature, not your intellect. For your intellect does not know anything except the trivialities that you have shoved into it, like garbage into a garbage can. The intellect can never bring the healing of the heart that is the atonement. It can only be utilized to argue against the insane perceptions you are used to, so that you might come to see that perhaps there's a greater good in giving up your insistence on treating the intellect as your God. Therefore, indeed, beloved friends, dance often, rejoice, play often. Let this year be that year in which you bring up within yourself everything unworthy of the mind of Christ, every thought of scarcity, every sense of unworthiness, every fear. Let them come up. Look at them. Embrace them. Transmute them through your own love of self and through your honesty. Accept where you are and don't pretend to be otherwise. For the wisest are always the humblest. Be you therefore at peace, beloved friends. Be you therefore at peace in all things, for we delight. And I speak here of the many we who are in what you might call a disembodied state, who are electing to participate with you, that are asking to be helped this year through this way. We delight in joining with you. We delight in loving you. We delight in waiting on you to welcome yourself home. Therefore, indeed, we will begin to end this message of this hour now. But as we close, I would ask that you would close your eyes for just a moment and take a deep breath into the body and let it go. And as the breath leaves the body, hold the thought that there's nothing worth holding on to any longer that keeps your peace and happiness at arm's length. Become committed. Become fully committed to the experience of happiness, even as you've been fully committed to unhappiness and limitation and lack. Give your Creator full permission this year to sweep the basement clean. There really isn't anything down there worth defending or protecting. And it will come to pass that you will know the perfect peace of empty-headedness, not knowingness. You will know what it means to be relieved of time and to be comforted by what is eternal. Peace be unto you always, and never once let yourself think that you are alone. It is what they call, what is this word you have? Haberdash. What is this haberdash? That is an interesting term. It is nonsense for you to think that I'm not with you. You have asked. I picked up the phone. We are in communication. That is the way it is It is the way it will be until the end of all illusion. Amen.
What motivates you? How does an enlightened person move throughout his or her day? Apparently, you have moved into a state of oneness with Source, yet you still have a distinct, unique personality. You are still a self, yet you are also one with God. Can you describe what the state is like for us?
Beloved friend, what motivates me? Worldly accolades. Being hung on so many walls in so many churches across the world. All of the many priests and ministers who make a very good living professing to teach my teaching, although they teach fear and guilt and judgment. What motivates me? The bets that I have placed with my comrades in arms, who often believe that I'm wasting my time with humanity. For there are indeed many masters in many dimensions that wouldn't touch this plane with a 10,000-foot pole. Yet I say unto you, beloved friend, I speak somewhat tongue-in-cheek, although I don't have one. What motivates me is what must come to motivate you when the Christ mind is awakened within your being and has come to outshine any other possibility. For what will motivate you is the deep appreciation for the grace that has healed your mind. The great mystery from which you have arisen that somehow reaches into your illusions and brings you home, you know not how. Love of your Creator will motivate you as you become more and more empty of self, empty of fear, empty of the need to survive, empty of everything unlike love, and more conformed to the instrument of peace. Beloved friend, what motivates me is the very fact that you exist, and that, at times, within you, your soul has cried out to come home. And because my Father has brought me home, because I know how perfect it is, how can I not extend myself to you? So to my many comrades who seem to wish to avoid ever taking on the human experience, I simply politely nod my non-physical head and say, well, yes, but you see, I know that no one goes home until everyone goes home. I am merely your brother, and I seem to have gone ahead of you a little while. Yet I say this unto you, the way of the heart must cultivate within you and will the recognition that there is no one and nothing outside of you, and that only love has the power to heal. And therefore, everyone that comes into your life is an aspect of your Savior, teaching you to cultivate the forgiveness, the patience, and the willingness to hear not the voice of ego within you, but to trust the guidance of the Holy Spirit in all matters, regardless of how insane it may seem to the world. What motivates me is the grace that released me from all illusion, even as that grace is already at work, accomplishing the same within you. What does it mean to go through the day in an enlightened state? I would be happy to tell you, only I have no days. For a day is a function of time. Time is something I no longer know anything about. It is not something that pervades my beingness. I abide only in what is eternal. And when fear has been completely uprooted from within your beingness, you too will know timelessness. There's a message in that answer. I hope you're listening. Beloved friend, what is it like to be one with the source of all creation, and yet to hold an individuated consciousness? Why not ask yourself? You know perfectly well. For in reality, you are one with the source. And again, as the message of this hour has shared, you are acting from your infinite perfection at all times to call qualities of experience, qualities of energy to yourself. That is exactly what I do. The only difference is I have chosen to call only that of the highest possible vibrations, while you are choosing to say to yourself and to me, well, yes, yes, all that bliss stuff is fine, but I still have to get a little taste of drama and suffering. I just want to make sure I've got this down before I leave this plane. In all respects, the choosing mechanism within you is equal to that within me. Therefore, understand well, if you would know what it means to know you are one with your Creator while yet exhibiting an individuality, simply begin to observe your own mind, your own choices, your own experiences with perfect innocence, constantly reminding yourself that the truth is true always. As a sunbeam can never escape the sun, as a wave can never escape the ocean, you remain as you are created to be, and you are given infinite and perfect freedom because you are made in the image of God. Therefore, beloved friend, consider well what you would desire and what your intention will be. Ask yourself moment to moment, what am I truly committed unto? For what I am committed to is the focus of my intention. And the intention that I focus on brings to me the fulfillment of my desire. And what I am experiencing, like it or not, is always the effect of my desire.
Would you please comment on the role of sexuality in sexual expression for those of us committed to a path of spiritual evolution?
Indeed, beloved friend, if you would be committed to a role of genuine spirituality, you must put that which is called the, I believe, the chastity belt upon the body. You must separate yourself from all those who seem to elicit little tickles of sensations in your body. You must banish from yourself all thought of another body next to yours. And if these things arise, by all means, whip yourself. Beloved friend, I've said many times that all events are neutral. All experiences are neutral. They will be, therefore, precisely what you choose them to be. Sexuality in your world most minds take this to mean that there is some sort of juxtapositioning of physical bodies, some groping of the hands and the lips and the tongues and what have you. But indeed, this is only the outer reflection or the symbolic expression of the energies being held within the mind. It is most appropriate to say that all of creation is an act of sexuality. It is an expression of energy which wishes to birth forth with great passion creation. And all relationships, whether it be between two bodies or between the moon and the sun, between the earth and the sky, all forms of relationship are inherently the same. They hold within themselves the promise and the purpose and the challenge of discovering the unity between the two or the three or the ten, it doesn't matter. Therefore, sexuality, as you understand it in your world, is only what you will choose it to be. It does not necessarily accelerate your awakening, and it does not necessarily impede it. What you approach with sanctity and purity of heart, what you approach in every relationship, what you approach from the recognition that creation streams forth only from the mind of God, and therefore the light of love, the presence of Christ is present in that one before whom you stand, or perhaps whom you lay next to. What you approach with sanctity is sanctified. What you approach with secretness, what you approach with neediness, is demoralized and destroyed. I would say unto you, beloved friend, you cannot transcend what is not first embraced. Therefore, search the soul well to see if there is any fear of the great intimacy and vulnerability that can be experienced in sexuality. Is there something in you conflicted that is not allowing you to truly drink in the beauty of the physical form of another, to pause over every curve and every dimple, and even every little hair upon the body? Can you see within this grand mystery? Can you pause long enough to lose the false self? Can you sanctify the touching of flesh? For I say unto you, you are the creator of what you experience. Sexuality is a grand thing. Let no one tell you that I avoided it when I was a man. After all, that's the whole point. I was, after all, a man. But I sanctified it to keep it holy. And sexuality can be experienced in its totality merely by looking into the eyes of another and setting yourself aside and asking only to see the face of Christ. For sexuality, the great longing within humanity is to find some method, some way to transcend the fear, the guilt, the deep contraction which is ego, to find some way to slip through the cracks and experience some momentary bliss of the unity of oneness. But I say unto you, cultivate the reality of your oneness within yourself, and indeed you will find that all relationships, whether you be with a body, with a blade of grass, or with the wind that touches your skin, will feel like a sexual experience as long as the body lasts. Let then this energy fill you. feel the bliss and the pleasure and the joy of sensuality and sexuality. See it happening all over the place on your planet, because without it, the planet wouldn't even exist. Beloved friend, have you not ever watched little children who run naked through the fields and play with their genitals without the least bit of thought? They derive from it a moment of pleasure, and occasionally they may touch each other. There's no judgment in this. There is only innocence. And the adults look and go, oh, isn't that cute? And some of them go, oh my good. Charlie, please cover that up. You can't do that. Mary, put your dress back down. Why? What is the adult afraid of, if not life itself? And make not of sexuality a specialness, but rather cultivate within it the sanctified state of consciousness in which you are deliberately choosing to set aside yourself to let Christ love Christ. Sexuality is a rather good thing if you choose to use the power of your beingness to sanctify it, that it may be holy. For what is holy gives rise to wholeness, and what is fragmented through fear, through guilt, through neediness, through mere lust, what is thus fragmented leads to fragmentation within one's consciousness. Bless sexuality. Let it become sanctified, and set aside all of those incarnations you held as a nun in monasteries, listening to false ideas out of someone else's fear of the body. It is only a communication device. What would you therefore choose to communicate through your experience of sexuality? Be at peace, beloved friend, and while the body lasts, my suggestion to you would be, enjoy it.
The statement is, I understand healing as Jeshua speaks of it in Course in Miracles, yet what needs to occur for bodily symptoms to no longer be in one's experience?
Beloved friend, as I have spoken of healing in that text, which you know as A Course in Miracles, is indeed the fundamental definition of healing. By considering it, it must flush up within you all the deeply held hopes and prayers and beliefs and need to have healing be something that also manifests the perfection of the function of the body according to your desire of what that perfection should be. What is necessary then for the removal of physical symptoms? The miracle. But the miracle is not something which is under your control. Listen well to the message of this session, for I've indicated already to you and deliberately indicated the answer to your question, and you will find it there. For rest assured, beloved friend, when there arises within the mind the hope or the wish that a physical symptom would leave the body, there must already be the enactment of an ancient belief that the body is what you are, and that therefore dis-ease of some kind, as you would call it this, limits your ability to extend love, to communicate with all of creation, and to be at peace. You may rest assured that when my many friends saw me with a crown of thorns upon my head, they thought, oh, poor loved one. Out of the belief that certainly spirituality must mean the power to overcome everything the mind has judged as a dis-ease. The point that I'm seeking to reach with you is an attempt to dig deep within the depth of your psyche, to bring to the surface with you an ancient belief that true spirituality is recognized by all absence of disease, and that if you were truly whole, it would never arise within the body. Yet I say this unto you, what if every moment of your experience was literally being brought to you of the Father, who alone knows the perfect plan for the healing of your mind? Remember, it is not possible to transcend what is not wholly loved. Therefore, place the attention on deepening the love of self, the exploration of the experience that has been called to the consciousness through the form of dis-ease of whatever kind. Learn to look upon it with the perfect innocence that you would look upon anything else, and see through it to see that it does not limit you in any way from being the unlimited presence of love. It is not a weakness, and it is not to be compared to what may appear to be a diseaseless body, for the eyes of the body do not show what is within another soul. Beloved friend, there is a part of you that carries an ancient tear. Let it be released, and healing will come.